Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm and author of Investing Simplified, the book. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial show in America, with a financial advisor, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and is broadcast live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck with a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com. Or you can call him right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. Or for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
Well, good morning and welcome to Investing Simplified. We've got a great show for you today. In studio with me is Kevin Stege with the Baker Colson CPA firm.
Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning, Kevin. And Carl's off again this week. And we are very fortunate today on the radio with us live. And listen, folks, if you have questions about the economy, this is the guy to pick up the phone and give a call to. You can call 503-417-9595, toll-free for podcast listeners and listeners that are affiliated in Phoenix, Arizona, can pick up the phone and call 877-733-1011. And, of course, this show is live Saturday morning, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. And in Arizona, we're delayed because of the time difference, but other stations may be carrying it delayed. If you're listening to this on a tape broadcast, the show does air live Saturday morning, 8 to 9. So with no further ado, we have on the line with us Rodney Johnson, co-editor of Economy and Market Daily with Harry Dent. And Rodney, are you there?
Yes, I am, Chuck. Good morning.
Good morning. What part of the sunny America are you in today?
I'm in Tampa, Florida today. 74 okay. degrees and gorgeous.
Okay, well, I could say ours looks gorgeous out there. It's not raining.
But it's not 74 degrees.
It's not 74. It's a little bit, maybe if you flip those, 47 might be closer. Hey, listen, there's a lot to talk about with the economy, what's going on. And you know, the Trump rally, you've got, what, the market closing 10 straight days up. You've got market movements looking very positively. But then I open up my email box, and I get my Money and Markets Economy newsletter, and I'm looking at it, and I think, holy cow, why real estate will never be the same. And I know this was Harry's. Harry wrote this, and Rodney, you can pass the blame to him. But I know at our meetings we've been talking about this for some time,
and we have. And it's not magic. You know, it's the same thing we talk about or consistently refer to, which is people, of course, and demographics. And with the large number of boomers moving into the later stages of life, then you're going to start having them pass. And there just won't be as many people to buy those homes in the short run. And so we've got kind of a long-term lull coming in real estate. At the same time, you have a dispersed workforce where so many more people are working gig economy or working at home, and it just doesn't require the same amount of commercial real estate. And so you've got two big forces that should kind of bleed away some of the demand for real estate in general. It doesn't mean there won't be pockets that people flock to, but you have real estate in general that should start to feel some of that pressure and come back off in price.
Well, one of the other concerns is I look at the amount of money people are sticking into real estate investment trusts, particularly commercial real estate. And then I read on the next page, he says commercial real estate will never be the same.
Well, and we have the, you know, you mentioned the 10 straight record highs on the Dow. One of the other things people aren't paying much attention to is the yield on Treasury bonds has actually gone down. And so you have the 10-year Treasury around a 2.32, 2.35%. The 30-year Treasury is stuck basically at 3%. And so with very low interest rates, where else do you look for yield? And so people have been piling into things like commercial real estate REITs and even, you know, apartment REITs and others, and they're doing it at the high. And so these things never end well. And so it's, as we've been trying to sound the warning bell, trying to get people to understand that you don't want to be chasing yield right now in those types of investments, right as prices are set to fall for a completely different reason, along with rates that might go up just a little bit and take some of the froth out of the market.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really concerned because I have people all the time running REITs to me, you know, which I don't offer to my clients, but you know, some of them are 60% finance, 70% finance, but I'm looking at that and saying, wow, if your guys' chart is even halfway close, even if they have a building that's 70% leveraged, they could get into trouble.
Right, and that's the old game of you borrow short and lend long, right? That's what got people into trouble, very large institutions. That's what got Lehman into trouble in 2008. Lehman Brothers wasn't broke in the sense of they didn't have assets. They had all the assets they needed. What they couldn't get was a 30-day loan because no one wanted to lend them money, even though they had all of these mortgages, which are assets, on their books. And they were using that short-term financing to carry these very long-term loans on houses and everything else. And the REITs do the same thing. They'll borrow short-term, typically a year, and then they'll make very long-term loans on the leases on the other side. And as rates go up some, those short-term, that short-term borrowing gets a lot more expensive and eats into your return just as rates go higher. So you lose twice. The financing takes away some of the power of what you had, and it makes it more expensive for them to operate in the first place.
Well, any way you cut it, if we look at the demographics, we got a two-pronged thing here, too. Social Security. You know, Social Security funds do not look very good in the long term and don't even look that good in the short term.
Yeah, we were together in Baltimore last week, the whole crew, and we get together about once a quarter because we have people spread across the nation and even in other countries, and we come in and kind of beat down on these different things. And Social Security, even state pensions, these are huge systemic problems that do not have a numerical fix. They just don't. Because, you know, you look at Social Security and you could either tax all income, get rid of the cap on income, but then what you're saying is people who make more, you get a worse deal because we're not going to increase your benefits, we're just going to tax you more. Or you cut the benefits that are being paid to everybody or something in between. It has to happen. There will be an adjustment. But it won't be today or tomorrow. And when it does happen, you can almost guarantee that it's going to be on people who haven't started receiving yet. And so what it means is the people who are most affected are the ones who aren't involved. It's just the darndest system. Because the ones who are involved, of course, are people who are either receiving Social Security or very close to it, and they are very active in saying, hey, let's not change this system because they worked for 40 years and paid in. But the ones who are going to, you know, get hit between the eyes are the ones who are, say, you know, my age, 50, 53, 54, who aren't close enough to really be quite concerned yet, but they're going to see higher taxes and lower benefits because it must happen. It must.
Well, I think they're going to have to also means test it.
Right, and that's just another way of reducing benefits.
Yeah.
And so I have been trying to sound the alarm for many years and telling people, look, build your own stream of income. Build your own personal pension. Don't rely on others because the game is coming to an end with this generation because we can't continue it. And when the music stops playing, you want to make sure that you've already got your chair with your name on it.
Well, and then on the other side of things, you know, you're talking about reducing benefits, so on and so forth. Then the current workers, what they're doing is, and a lot of people don't see this, is what they call the Social Security wage base. And that's how much all of us workers can make that they withhold Social Security taxes on. And in the past, that's gone up a nominal amount each year to adjust for inflation and so on and so forth, maybe a couple $1,000s a year. That's hopping $10,000 a year. We're up over $120,000. And, you know, it was under 90 just a decade ago, roughly. I'm just pulling the numbers off the top of my head. But they're continually increasing how much wages are subject to Social Security withholding. So the current worker is being affected that way also.
Right. And if they, the government decided to remove that cap entirely, which a lot of people say, hey, you know, they're rich, why not charge, charge them the taxes? $120,000 is a good sum of money. There's no question. But people who make $120,000 do not consider themselves wealthy. You've got to make an awful lot more before people believe they're in that, you know, wealthier category. And but the problem is when we increase the amount that we're going to tax or the amount of wage we're going to tax, call it $120,000, $150,000, $200,000, $250,000, we're not talking about allowing those people to receive benefits based on that. Because you got to remember, your Social Security benefit is a percentage of your wage that you earned in your working years. And so what to balance it, if they kept paying a higher benefit and taxed a higher wage, it doesn't change the equation. It doesn't help anybody. To make Social Security, you know, more sound than it is, they would have to tax a higher wage and not allow those higher earners to get a larger benefit when they retire. They would have to adjust those things, which goes back to what Chuck said a minute ago. It's literally means testing, saying you as a worker are going to pay more in taxes, but when you retire, you don't get a benefit of it. And what we've done at that point, once you means test it, you've made it welfare for the elderly. And nobody wants to say those words, but that's what it is. You've changed it to say, look, if you're, you know, making more, you're paying more into the system, and you're redistributing that wealth to somebody else. And that's what the system is.
Yeah, right. That's basically what it's always been.
Yeah.
And it's set up that way from the beginning. If you are a lower income worker, your working life, you get a larger percentage of your wage in retirement. And so as you move up the scale, it's a lower percentage of your wage that's replaced as Social Security benefit. And so it's progressive to begin with, meaning that it's redistributing wealth. And they just have to do more of it if they want it to, in any way, shape, or form, be a sound program.
You know, one other thing that we see in the tax side of things regarding Social Security is this thing called the tax gap. What they project they should collect from a particular tax program, i.e. self-employment tax, Social Security withholdings, that type of a thing, compared to what they actually collect. And one area that's going to need some tightening down is in the area of self-employment tax for small businesses, small business owners. And the problem is the tax burden, by the time you tack on federal income tax, state income tax, and Social Security tax or self-employment, you're talking at least 40% of somebody's net profit going out in taxes. And most businesses, small businesses, can't sustain that. So the tax regimen is to aggressively attack this, looking for any legal way to pay less tax. And there's so many different ways to do that. That's where, you know, we've talked with our listeners before about corporations, paying yourself a salary and how that game's played, partnerships with a passive spouse as a partner. And so there's all these ways for people to try to avoid it and legally. And so it's, anyway, that's just my take. That's what I see.
Well, you know, and here's a fun thing, you know, because all these words are unemotional, right? And so it's the problem is getting a clear-eyed reform that's going to be an easy-to-assess tax that actually serves the purpose we all want. Because there's a purpose. Let's go to 30,000 feet. I want to make sure that we don't have old-age poverty in the United States of America. And it seems like a common goal. That's what Social Security was about, because we were kicking them all out of the workforce because we instituted the retirement age of 65 that we kind of pulled out of the air. And we said, by the way, when we kick you to the curb, we're going to give you this little, you know, stipend over here so you won't be dead broke. I'm good with that. I think most Americans are good with that. And so we need to find a way of addressing it that isn't convoluted and doesn't have so many loopholes to it. Because there's a strangeness to the higher the tax, as wages go up, you're telling people who are earning more to just take it, when you're arguably talking to people who have been more successful and perhaps have more financial, you know, wherewithal and knowledge. And so they're going to do exactly what you're talking about. They're going to use everything in front of them to pay less tax. And it's the smart thing to do for your position. But it comes down to, what do you think they're doing with your money? If somebody looks you in the eye and says, that money's going to these four people down the street who are retired and using it to spend on their medication, are you going to be as motivated to avoid the tax legally? Not, this isn't anything illegal. Or are you going to say, you know what, that's part of what I do in my society, let's make it happen.
Well, Rodney, we got a caller online that's got a question for you about Social Security. Lee, are you there?
I am.
And your question?
Well, let's see. I've heard you talking about our big liabilities coming up, our Social Security, and I think you said pensions or something like that, Rodney. Mm-hmm. And what I'm wondering is, I've heard from other radio shows that they keep referring to Social Security as entitlements, like you're getting something for nothing in a way. And in my case, for example, I'm 64 now. I had Social Security taxes. I've been working forever, 50-some yeah. years. You know, I think at my first job, I worked a 10-hour Sunday, and I made $8 because they took out Social Security.
Yep.
So you've got the time value of money. So what I'm wondering is people who have been working a long time and putting in money that the government theoretically is investing in a smart way, and you've got that time value of money factor where, you know, when you start to get into the third or fourth or fifth decade, your interest starts to just explode the value.
Mm-hmm.
Is the government losing? We're running into this Social Security crisis, but am I going to be getting out a ton more money than I should have by investing monies all those years? Or is the government kind of making a profit? Has anybody ever sat down and figured out, gosh, a typical worker has put in money for 50 years. They're going to live so long after they start to take Social Security. And the government is either going to lose a ton of money on the average worker or make a ton of money or something a little bit. Does that make sense to you, that question?
Yeah, it does. And let's start with, let's unpack it starting at the beginning. And I think you're so right. We use the word entitlement because it's a technical term that applies to a government benefit that when you meet qualifications, they must pay. It has nothing to do with whether or not they have the money or, you know, they've done good things with it or anything else. When you meet these criteria, you are entitled to that payment. Unfortunately, it has a real bad connotation. It's like, wait a second, entitlement sounds like I didn't do anything when what I did was
exactly.
work for 40 stupid
exactly.
years and pay in. So I completely understand how that would leave a bad taste in your mouth, because it certainly doesn't mine, because I've been working a long time too. The next piece is the government, our pension system, the Social Security system, like every other country on the planet except for Australia, they don't invest the money. What they do is they use the money you pay in to pay current retirees. And so there is a big bucket of cash out there. It's the Social Security Trust Fund. It doesn't include all the money you put in, because a lot of what you put in went out to retirees along the way, which implies, which you'll immediately recognize, that we always have more workers, which isn't the case, which makes it a
right.
bad plan. But there was this surplus that by law the government can only put into U.S. Treasury bonds. That's the only thing it can buy. Now, you might think that's a bad idea, and a lot of people say, well, gee, if they would invest in the stock market, this, that, or the other. But let's back up. We're talking trillions of dollars, literally about $5 trillion. Where else could the government have put $5 trillion that was safe and viable? And so I'm not so hung up on that. your last point, and we'll talk about the thing as a total, is there are calculations about what people will receive. And it ranges. If you are a lower income person, if you've been making $40,000 a year, you know, is kind of your top earning for many years, then you're probably going to get and I'm kind of guessing at the numbers, but they're close, a 6 or 7% return on the money you put in over your expected lifetime. As you go up the income scale to the highest, over what Carl alluded to a minute ago, $120,000 is the top amount of wage that can be taxed. If you're there or higher, then your benefit is going to be around 1.5 to 2% return, which, of course, is very low. And it's because you get a lower and lower percentage of your income sent back to you.
Got it. So there is no time value of money built in, because essentially it sounds like, in a way, it's sort of like a modified Ponzi scheme where the new money coming is paying the first investors, essentially.
You got it. That's exactly what happened. And it's all built on the notion that the government will kind of manage it along. The best return were the people who retired early. And it is the silent generation, the, you know, whatever you want to call them, the Bob Hope generation. The people that were working in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and even 60s, when they started retiring in the 70s, what they got was their benefit plus COLA. COLA being the cost of living adjustment, meaning we're going to adjust it for inflation,
right,
sent their return on money through the roof because it happened during the 70s when things were so ugly with inflation. And so we've modified it some, and there are a lot of different changes to it. Those people had a return that was literally in the hundreds of percent and higher, but only because of the weirdness that happened with all that. And then it's trailed off over time. And so today, Social Security runs a deficit. We are spending more to pay benefits than we're taking in tax. And it's been in a deficit for several years. But we have this theoretical trust fund out there of trillions of dollars that we're spending down. And so that spend down is going to happen until about 2033, 2034, which isn't a long time from now. I mean, we're talking less than 20 years. And then there is literally no more trust fund. And we will be bringing in about 71, 72 cents on the dollar of what we need to pay the benefits that are due every day. And so
the only way to build up that trust fund would be to have all of a sudden a major population boom with tons of workers coming in paying into the system, I take it?
You got it. Or you have to tax the current workers more, or you have to pay out lower benefits. So those are the only ways. And so here's what gets me about all this, Lee, is that Social Security is a numerical thing. You and I can sit down, and in less than 10 minutes, we can go over the numbers. We're all going to be on the same page. We're going to understand what they are, and we're going to look at the possible outcomes and go, okay, what do we do next? It's easy in a sense of we know what the problems are because they're so specific in black and white. That doesn't exist with the big problem in the room, which is Medicare. Healthcare costs expand, and there is no way to fix that anyone has figured out beyond rationing care, which no one wants to do. No one wants to be the guy saying, you can't get that. So that's what scares me.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Well, Rodney, we really appreciate the time today. And I just want to know, when we get to Nashville, are you going to be wearing cowboy boots or not?
I have cowboy boots. I don't wear them often right now, but I might wear them more often. Of course, as Chuck is alluding to me moving to Texas, I am going to get a trailer today to get the stuff out of storage to make sure I can get it moved. And we're in the ugly part of the process. So the next time we speak, which I assume will be April after you talk to Harry next month, I will be calling from the Lone Star State.
Ah, wow. Deep in the heart of Texas.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, are you going to be close to Dallas?
No, actually, we have family south of Houston, and so we found a similar community to what we have here with a lot of sailboats and different things over there between Houston and Galveston, and so we'll be much closer to the coast.
Oh, wow. So you'll be able to get out there and continue your boating.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's great. Well, listen, we appreciate the time. We hope you have a terrific time moving and don't have any major problems.
And, thank you very much. That's always the worry, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That everything gets to where it's supposed to. You bet. So
have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too. Thank you very much. We're going to take a quick break and come back with the tax investigator. You're listening to Investing Simplified. If you want to pick up the phone and call Kevin or Chuck, call and ask Kevin or Chuck a question, pick up the phone and call 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. Toll free, 877, where is it at? 733-1011. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
Say goodnight to me.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. Remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask Kevin Stege, CPA and shareholder of the Baker Coulson CPA firm, that tax question that's been keeping you up at night. You can call Kevin 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the CPA with the tax answers, Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified, and I understand we have a couple callers on the line.
Yes, we have Jack has a tax question right up your alley. Jack, are you there?
Greetings.
Greetings.
My wife and I built the house we're in about 30 years ago. We now are going to sell it and downsize, and the sales price will probably be a little bit north of the sum of our basis and the $500,000 gain exclusion that's allowed to a couple for a residence. I'm okay with that. I understand that we'll pay some capital gains tax on anything above that, but my real question is, when you sell a house that you built decades ago, what requirement exists in terms of documentation for the basis?
Do you want what the tax code says, or do you want practicality of what really happens?
Really want practicality of what happens.
This is the difference between what you learn in university textbooks and what actually happens. So in general, basis isn't a heavily audited area. It does occasionally get looked at if other things are audited. Obviously, I'm not saying don't have your ducks in a row, but... and the tax code says if you don't have basis, it defaults to zero. That's what, if you don't have records for your basis, that's what you have to put down as zero. From experience, I have never seen a reasonable basis that has been reconstructed best you can be rejected. If you're not cheating on other areas, chances are they're not going to worry too much about that. So that's one of these gray areas. The law says one thing, but as best you can put things together, usually with my clients, I don't ask for receipts. I ask for numbers, and I let them know, hey, you try to have as much documentation as you can. And they lay out, they say, well, you know, we added on this addition, and we remember it cost us $15,000 for this and another $2,000 for the deck out back, and, you know, so on and so forth. And they put it together best they can and go from there.
Okay, well, I don't know if I have the actual checks anymore, but we have a file that would show that we paid the builder about $190,000. We paid about $30,000 for the lot. We paid for a patio and some of the kinds of things that you're talking about. The sum of it all is probably in the neighborhood of $260,000, $270,000, somewhere in that neighborhood. But in terms of actually having any receipts from that far back, I just haven't retained these thick sheaves of files that contain the visa receipts and the checkbook receipts and so forth. I should have, but I'm sure I would scramble to try to find all of that. What form do you report this on? Is it a regular Schedule D transaction, or is there something else for the sale of a residence?
It is a Schedule D. That is where it is summarized. And the Schedule D information comes from a form 8949. I hope I got my form right. And that's where you would just report when you bought it, when you sold it, what your basis is, what you sold it for, and what your sales expenses are, and then select the code to say $500,000 exclusion, and what's left should hit your long-term capital gain line and flow to your Schedule D.
I appreciate all of that.
Absolutely. Very good question. And best of luck with that. I think you shouldn't have much trouble at all reporting your best estimate on that. So that's a very good question. Do we have a second caller, Chuck? Or
yes, we do. Okay. We got another Jack, number two. Jack, are you there? You got a question about a 401k?
Yeah, I do. How are you doing?
Good. How about you?
Actually, good. My question is a couple. Well, back when the market was about at 18,000, I was kind of told that I should liquidate all my 401k investments into cash, you know. And now, since then, the market's shot up to 20 now. Is it kind of, was that a bad deal to do, or am I pretty safe?
Well, how old are you?
64.
Okay, so what year you want to retire?
In August.
In August of this coming year?
Yeah.
I tell you what, I would be in cash too right now. Here's the thing. We've had a nice upswing. Okay, we've had nice things, and it looks like they're going to get a tax plan, and we're going to maybe continue this kind of growth. But you know, we still think there's going to be another correction coming. We've had 8 run-up years, which historically it runs about 7.5 to 8 years. We're going to have another step back, and what you can't afford right now is being 64 years old, wanting to retire, and have the market go down 40%. And you're sitting there with, instead of 400,000, you've got 240.
Yeah, you got that right.
Yeah, you just cannot take that risk right now. And I would tell you, if I were working with you, I would have you in that position, conservative, right now, because we're talking a very short term. You know, these crashes come in very short terms. And the fact is, if anybody could predict exactly when they're going to happen, you'd become a bazillionaire because you could short the market and come out extremely well. But the fact is,
no kidding.
Nobody knows. I mean, we don't know. We don't know. I mean, like right now up in our area, the real estate market's really, really good. But when I look at Harry Dent's demographics, I'm saying, holy cow, real estate's going to go down and not come back for a very long time. And that's kind of scary. And so, you know.
But you know what?
No, go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, so real estate, if real estate tanks, I'll tell you what, the market will tank.
Oh, yeah. That's really what I was concerned about. I was thinking, God, I took my money out so soon, and I could have been making a little bit more. But then on the other hand, it could have happened 8 months after I did it, and then I'd be stuck basically with nothing.
Yeah. Hey, Jack, here's the thing. You don't make it till you sell it and keep it. And when people let the money grow and accumulate and think, hey, oh, boy, I ran it up another 10%, and then the market goes down 40%, well,
yeah,
it you didn't keep it. So right now you need to be in defensive mode, preserve principal, live to fight another day to take advantage of big dips in the market, but not to be in the market to have the risk of the market, but to have the cash to take advantage of a down market. Makes sense.
That's what I was thinking too. But yeah. One more quick question: the 401k people that I have now, when I do retire, they want to know. They ask me why would I want to transfer my money back over to a bank? You know, roll it over, and they say, "Why don't I just leave it there? It's going to grow, and they're federally insured." at the same place. Does it really matter?
No, no, no. Your 401k is not federally insured. If somebody told you that, they're not telling you the truth. Your 401k, there's no 401k I know of that is federally insured. That is not true. It might have some SIP.
Really?
It might have some SIPC coverage for securities for theft and fraud, but you're not you're not insured like you are in a bank. And anybody doing a 401k to tell you that, I would run away from those people because they're thieves. Because they're not telling you the truth.
Oh, wow. So in my best interest, in as soon as the day I leave, have that money transferred or rolled over to my own bank.
I usually recommend that when you retire, that you take control of your retirement plan. Do you have children?
No. Well, they've grown up now.
Yeah, but you have heirs, right?
Right.
Yeah, one of the biggest reasons why we tell people to leave your 401k, when you retire, take your money out, roll it over to your own advisor or to the bank or wherever you feel comfortable at. Put that money into an IRA, and then you can name your spouse, of course, as your primary beneficiary, and you can name your children as the contingent beneficiary, and you can provide the stretch option, which allows your children to take your retirement plan after you and your wife pass away and stretch it out over their lifetime. It's a great tax saver.
Oh, wow, that's good to know. Yeah, nobody told me about that.
Well, of course not. They want you to stay there.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah,
well,
so when you're...
I appreciate your help so much, so I'll let you go, and thank you very much again.
Thank you, Jack. Good call. And, Kevin, we're going to get right back into the tax investigator, because I know everybody out there is just waiting, because it is tax season.
It is tax season, yes, and we are going to address a key topic, current topic, that is gray, very similar to what we discussed in our first...
Is it 50 Shades of Gray or...
No. Hey, this family show here.
Okay.
So, our first caller, Jack, we recommend to our clients to keep your tax records for 7 years. 3 years is typically the standard statutory look back that the IRS has. There's a few exceptions where they can kind of go back 7 years. But anytime we're dealing with real estate, keep your records indefinitely for that real estate property. Even if you have the home sale exclusion, so on and so forth, there's always keep your real estate records indefinitely. So that's kind of a general rule of thumb there. So today on the Tax Investigator, we're going to talk about the executive order that Trump on January 20th, his first day in, gave to the IRS regarding the Affordable Care Act. And the executive order was to reduce the burden of enforcement. I believe it was something along those lines. And so this has created an interesting issue for this filing year. Just a little background is with the Affordable Care Act in 2014, 15, and 16, the penalties for not having health insurance were pretty small in 14. They grew pretty much in 15. And now in 16, they're pretty significant penalties if you didn't have health insurance. And so the IRS looked at this executive order and they tried to determine, well, what can we do within the laws that are given us by Congress to reduce the burden? And so what they are going to do is they indicated they are, I'll step back. In 2016, filing your taxes for the previous year that you're doing right now, you had to do one of three things on your tax return. And that is, in fact, I should say, you have to do one of three things. One is, if you don't have health insurance, pay the penalty. If you do have health insurance, check the box that you are covered. Or three, check the box that you were exempt because you fit one of these particular exceptions that they gave. So you have three options. The IRS decided to not, they were going to, if one of those three things were not done, they would not process your tax return and issue a refund. It was an incomplete return, wouldn't do it. So they decided after this executive order to go ahead and process returns that are silent regarding Affordable Care Act provisions, one of these three things. So the segment today is, if you have done your taxes and you come up to the point of, I wasn't covered for the whole year, so I owe a penalty or a part of a year's penalty, and I didn't meet an exemption, you have one of three options. One is file your tax return and just go ahead and pay the penalty. The second is file an extension and calculate your tax. I would recommend paying your tax plus your penalty by April 15th, but have an extension. That's just a prepayment on your federal income tax. And you can kind of give some time to let things shake out here regarding what's really going to happen with the enforcement of the Affordable Care Act penalties. So filing extension is an option. And then the third one is to just go silent on your tax return regarding this provision. Don't check the box that you're covered. You don't want to say you're covered when you're not. And if you don't meet an exemption, you don't want to say that you do there either. But if you don't calculate the penalty and put it on, they're still going to process your tax return and issue you a refund if you are due a refund. So those are the three options. And again, it's kind of gray because right now the tax law says you have to submit those three things. But the IRS is publicly saying we're going to go ahead and process returns if you're silent on that. Now, if you decide to go silent on it, you may end up getting correspondence from the IRS regarding your lack of information, and they may assess a penalty. They may send you correspondence, so on and so forth. So that's down the road what might happen. But it is an option, and it's out there. It's a gray area. It's hard to know what to do because they wouldn't have done this if they weren't going to provide some sort of provision for relief or changing something. So it's just one of those things we'll keep our listeners updated on who have to file for those penalties. And
okay,
so,
well, we're going to take a quick break with that and come right back. We've got a caller on the line, Mark. He's got a question about down in the market. So we'll be right back and we'll talk to Mark.
God is great. Beer is good. People are crazy.
Hi, I'm Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and co-host of the radio program Investing Simplified. I recently left the Warren Allen Law Firm to open my own office. Professional and personable service have always been the hallmarks of my practice. I believe that this move will allow me to spend more time with my clients. For more than 37 years, it has been my privilege to assist clients with practical estate planning with wills, trusts, powers of attorney, advance directives, and other documents so that they may have peace of mind knowing that their affairs are in order. When probate becomes necessary, emotions of family members may become fragile. Having an experienced attorney that can empathize with what the client is going through makes the process much easier. My new office is conveniently located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 101, just across from Mall 205, and my phone number is 971-229-0585. That's 971-229-0585.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that tax question answered. Call Chuck or Kevin now at 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's Chuck Price and Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. We got Mark on the line with a question. Mark, are you there?
Hello.
Hello.
So now, I got about 8 years ago or so, I got crunched pretty bad, okay? And so now everybody who I hear about, including you guys and a few other folks, if you've got a larger amount of capital, we'll help you out do something. Well, what about the rest of us who are now don't have a larger amount of capital and have basically got crunched? And then, you know, what do we do?
Well, did you get totally out of the market? You didn't go back in, or you just stayed on the sidelines?
Well, I got, you know, some of it I was out already before that happened, but some of it's, you know, just hanging out there.
Okay. Well, there are things you can do if you know. Here's one of the major problems with investing. Anytime you hear the word invest, there's risk.
Of course.
And anytime you invest money, you can lose. You know, but the real key is when you retired It's the volatility of the investment that you have, which you have to look at. Like we have some managed portfolios that our clients are in. Some have a 5 to 8% stop loss. Now, that's the stop loss on their equity side of the portfolio and even on the bond side of the portfolio. But they try to measure the volatility and the biggest drawdown they had. In other words, if you ever looked at your statement, the most it would ever be down is 3.54%. And that took about 11 months to recover. So here's the question. How much volatility can you stand to put in back into the market since you had this big loss? How much volatility can you stand to invest and put your money back into the market? And the key question is, if you cannot stand any volatility, if you couldn't stand any kind of loss, then you're limited to two investments. You're limited to bank CDs, which are paying anywhere from 1% to 3%. You're limited to a fixed annuity products, which pay 3 to 4%, or a fixed index product that I wouldn't say a variable product, because variable annuities, there's no guarantees.
Right.
You know, unless you die, there's a guaranteed death benefit, usually. But there's no benefit, no guarantee on your principal. So you're really limited to fixed annuities, fixed indexed annuities, or CDs at the bank. And right now, I wouldn't go into commercial real estate bonds. I know there are people out there all the time contacting me on things about real estate, and I had some people contact me on one that's 60% leveraged. The problem is, if Harry Dent's right about real estate, what's going to happen, a lot of people putting money in that real estate at 60% are going to end up having to call that loan.
Yeah, because they're making a bubble.
That's right. That's exactly correct. So I happen to think right now, I still think the market's going to take another correction sometime, you know, before the end of this year. And I think that's going to be a great buying opportunity. The only thing is, I would say to watch it, because what we're not sure of is if this is going to be a down market like the turn of the century, 2000, 2000, 2001, 2002, or is it going to be more like what happened in 2008 where it went down for 6-8 months and then gradually started coming back up. So yeah. That's what we don't know. But I think there's going to be an opportunity. And here's kind of our philosophy on this, because based on demographics, we think we're going to have a crunch. We think we're going to have, you know, maybe 1 to 3 years down, but then a longer term coming up, 7 to 9 years. So that's going to be a great opportunity for anybody who got ripped in the previous markets to kind of hold tight. And when you get a chance to get in on a down market, when this takes a big dip, then that's the time to come back in and ride that back up.
Well, it's better than not doing anything.
Yeah, you got to have a strategy, and that's the other thing. I would suggest you talk to an advisor and develop a strategy for yourself based on the amount of money you have and how much risk you can really take. But you got to be honest. One of the things is hard for me with clients, if they tell you, well, I can accept 10% volatility. I have no problem with 10% volatility. And then you have 3% volatility and they want to get out. Well, that's when, if you got a good money manager, he's buying opportunities because he just got hit. He's going to be looking for opportunities to get it back. And when you jump out of an investment like that for a short downfall, you never catch up.
Yeah, I understand how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what I would recommend.
The problem that you end up with is, though, that nobody wants to handle anybody who doesn't have, you know, a certain amount of capital.
And well, that's...
If you get your capital back up to the level if you can't get anybody to want to help you plan it.
Well, you know, without getting personal on the amount of money you're talking about, that would be the thing you'd have to look at, because there are plenty of places that help lower income. I mean, there are. I'll give you an example. Edward Jones has almost an office in every 2 mile radius, and they help investors at any rate. You can start with them as little as $500 down or $25 a month, and you can invest in an investment program. So there still are brokerage houses that will do that, and work with lower income people.
And, well, at least that's good to know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are plenty of those stores around that you can visit, and probably one very close to your house.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
You bet. Thank you. Okay, we've got another quick call here. Connie has got a question about tax return on her deceased father. So, Kevin, this is right down the tax man's alley. Are you there, Connie?
I am. Hello there.
Hello. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Okay. I was wondering, my father passed away last April, and do I need to file a federal tax return for him? He was living in an independent living facility. He was drawing Social Security. That's about it.
Well, if it's just Social Security, most likely he will not have a filing requirement for his final 1040. I do often recommend filing one. It would be a fairly simple return for somebody to do, just to dot the I's and cross the T's so there's no, you know, the IRS knows that he passed away and that the statute starts, so on and so forth. It's not a bad idea, but it doesn't sound like it would be required if that's his only...
Okay. Well, I've always filed for him because he always had a very simple one. He did draw some bank interest, and he had an annuity, which he drew interest on the withdrawals, but there were no federal taxes withdrawn or, you know, held out from those two things.
You know, probably not a bad idea because there was a little other income, not knowing the level, just to take his 1099s for those 4 months and file a final, make sure his date of passing is up at the top of the return. And that's...
Would that be like a part year resident?
No,
it's
full year. He's full year, but you just use part, you know, the income is just... 4 months out of the year as opposed to 12 months. So that's kind of prorated for you already.
Sure.
There's a chance he would have an estate return, probably not from what you're saying, you know. Okay, yeah. Not an inheritance, but an estate income tax return sometimes is needed. But if the assets are transferred and it's just bank accounts, probably not a big deal. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay,
right,
well,
thank you.
Thanks for the call. Good question.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Just a couple of announcements. Next week, I'm going to have Sherry McCants back, the nutrition gal, talking about nutrition, talking about how to lower your blood sugar. And I highly recommend it. And, in fact, I've added her fat-burning recipes to our newsletter. So if you want to get my newsletter, you can sign up on the website, either on Investing Simplified Radio, or you can also on pfgwm.com. You can sign up for our newsletter. I'm also in this week's newsletter. I'm going to run a copy of Harry Dent's Economy of Markets, and it's a free newsletter, so I'm not violating any copy laws, and they let me do this to sell not sell it because it's free. But you can also sign up for Harry's free newsletter, Harry and Rodney's free newsletter. And I really recommend, if you're a listener to this show, you should get that and read it. And it's some very, very good sound information. Now, it's not necessarily the way that we invest in some of their stuff, but some of their stuff we don't. And it's strictly up to you. It's you can pick and choose what you decide that you want to do. But it's very good information. Kevin, how does somebody get a hold of you?
We are at baker-colson.com. Our phone number is 503-666-5569, and we're located out the east side of Gresham on Division.
Okay, and Carl Jepson can be contacted at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 101, Portland, Oregon, and his phone number is 971-229-0585. And I can be reached at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, right next door to Carl, or he's right next door to me. I don't know. It's one or the other. It could be both. Anyway, my number is 503-253-3000 or at pfgwm.com, and also at toll-free at 877-50-PRICE. And we do want to mention for, again, our listeners who are listening to us taped, this show is broadcast live every Saturday morning, 8 to 9 in Portland, Oregon, Pacific Standard Time. And we hope to be back next week. And like I said, I'll have Sherry McCants on there with us. And don't forget, keep our phone numbers. And if you got a question, If during the week, you can call me at 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. Thanks for listening to Investing Simplified. Have a safe weekend and have a great weekend out there.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. How often do you have a checkup? Annually? Only when you're not feeling your best? Or are you one who waits until there is an emergency condition? High blood pressure, rapid pulse, or sleepless nights could be the result of your investment portfolio or no estate plan. But there is a specialist ready to offer you a checkup on your financial health.
Hey, Gene, Dr. Price.
Chuck Price, the financial doctor and author of Investing Simplified, is offering you a free financial checkup. Whether you're asking for a second opinion, a complete financial physical, or investment stress test, Chuck Price, the financial doctor, can help diagnose your money ailments and prescribe a prudent path towards healthy investments and peace of mind. Call 503-253-3000 to schedule your financial checkup or on the web at pfgwm.com. That's pfgwm.com. You'll feel better.
Kilmeade, Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity, Mark Levin, The Dana Show, and Lars Larson. This is Portland's right place to talk. Freedom 970, KUFO AM, Portland.